The lights are on red. We're away.
Three, two, one. Hello and welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, January 15th. This is episode number 210. My name is Jim Race, and I'm here with Jules Cisek. Good evening, Jules.
Good evening, Jim.
Been kind of a quietish week. There's still a fair amount going on.
There's a lot going on in South America, but we just don't get to see enough.
Indeed. Indeed. Or we have to get it through kind of oddball means or watch little short bits on Versus, right, for us here in the States. And so, and kind of to that, I haven't been keeping up, but I know that you have, so we can talk about that. We did get a fair amount of emails, but we really haven't pulled a lot in for this particular show right now. We've been kind of inundating the airwaves, if you will, with listener email. Still responding to everybody, but I do know that David Emmett at Moto Matters is still having issues with his site and is working on doing some hosting provider changing. You're probably more in tune with that than I am.
Yeah, I mean, he's technical issues like this that he's run into are a real pain in the ass to fix, and so he's working as hard as he can. He knows what he's doing. Anybody who can't reach the site, you can actually probably reach it through like a proxy service, but yeah, just hang in there.
Yep. And so have some patience, and I'm sure he'll be with you momentarily. Other things, however, going on, have been kind of interesting. You want to cruise us through our main topics this evening?
I'm just going to remind everybody to please send in your top 10 riders to the decade at MotoGPOD.com email address. We're going to try to get that done by next week. We didn't get that many responses. We would like to get at least a good 20, 30 responses so we can get a good statistical kind of thing going. And originally, we were actually talking, it should just be MotoGP and 500cc, but pretty much everybody had sent in their top 10 list so far, includes people like Troy Velez and Haga, and even like the Prez. So, great. Make it your favorite motorcycle riders, as long as, I was going to say, as long as it's road racing, but it doesn't even include that because there's some Dakar guys in there too. So, just send in your favorite racers, and I think that'll make it even more interesting. But the key is to really look back. 10 years ago, there were a lot of people that are not even around anymore. Right. So, dig deep into your memories, and I really enjoy seeing like names pop up that I was like, oh yeah, crap, I totally forgot that guy was still racing in 2000. You know?
Yep. Yeah, it's been fascinating, and especially seeing the divergence. You can see a little bit of home country partisanship in some of them.
Just fine, you know.
No, it's totally fine. It's been there's some stalwarts that are in pretty much all of them, but there have been some names that have done the same thing for me. I've been like, oh,
yeah,
that's right,
yeah.
So yeah, definitely real cool.
And there was also this thing on ESPN last week where on Friday they had a little voting poll system where, of course, it's ESPN, so they have like, you know, three NASCAR drivers and Michael Schumacher, and then this guy Valentino Rossi races on two wheels. Well, it kind of went and took off in a lot of motorcycle forums, and so as a result, Rossi got placed second. I think the only reason why Shumi really beat him is because everybody who was voting for Rossi was probably putting Shumi second, and there was probably a lot of people that were also voting for Shumi because Valentino Rossi got the most number one votes.
Yeah, yeah, that was cool. I think voting finished Monday night in We actually got a couple of early emails going, how do we vote?
Right.
We're like, it's done.
Yeah, it's done. It's done.
But yeah, no, that was very cool. And it was kind of very interestingly generated by, it seemed like it was an online thing, which, you know, anytime you've got an online forum, you're going to get the enthusiast for that sport, like, kicking in.
Exactly. Exactly.
So
that's what I'm saying. Like, I think that there was a meme that spread, because I saw in a lot of motorcycle forums, oh, go over there and vote for Rossi.
Yep.
On Facebook, same kind of thing. So I think there was basically like the Jimmy Johnson guys probably don't know how to use a computer. So man, I'm really mean, aren't I? And correct.
Just remember who to send the email to, folks. Now, you know, I should say, back in the 80s, I actually liked NASCAR. And then that faded.
Well, there was a time when it was actually stock car racing.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that was kind of when it started changing. Anyway, let's move on before we get in even more trouble.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you want to talk about the car?
Yeah, so very, very quickly. I mean, like, it's not over yet, and I'm watching it via Versus almost exclusively. I'm trying to not follow it on the website because I do like to watch. Basically, Versus is got Toby Moody on it, and it's just really fun listening to him explain what's going on. But they're a day behind, basically. So,
right.
Like, if I go to the website, like, before they even show it on Versus, then I'm actually 2 days ahead by looking at the website. So, you know, but the main thing is that, you know, by now the weekend has passed. Last weekend we had a really big issue, which was that on Saturday during a special stage that included a bit of road that was basically an actual public road. Mark Coma, who wasn't leading the bikes, but he was really charging. I think he won two stages at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And they think he did an illegal tire change, because when he arrived and Toby Moody's was very adamant about it, the fact that when they looked at the tire, it was like, there's no way this tire was, you know, out there in the searing heat for 200 kilometers through dunes and rocks and asphalt too on that public road. And still had, you know, little knobbies on it and everything. So they docked him 6 hours. So basically, you know, I mean, there's no way he can even place in the top 10. But it's cool because, you know, now he has almost nothing to race for. This is, for those of you who don't follow the car, Mark Coma won last year and placed second, I think, the year before that. So he's definitely a great rider. And it's kind of, I think it'll be kind of fun because he's going to now basically just try to win, go for the wins, the stage wins, instead of like doing like some kind of crazy strategy. So we may see probably like the best of his ability as a result, because he won't be like, you know, he can take a chance because, well, you know, his Dakar is over. Okay, so he breaks his bike. Okay, it's over anyway. He might as well push it. And he's been pushing it. I mean, you know, when he gets beaten, he gets beaten by like 5 seconds. You know, it's pretty wild.
Apparently today's scenery was supposed to be really, really good. So Toby was raving about that on good old Twitter.
I have to stay away from Twitter too. And it's, you know, the car is so long. It's like, how can you stay away from the internet for 2 weeks?
Yeah,
you can't. You can't. So basically, like, you know, just, I'm just trying like to look the other way. But you know, the cars are kind of settling into a pattern. I mean, we don't really know who's going to win the cars, but it looks like it's going to be Volkswagen because there's just three Volkswagens leading. And the trucks thing has gotten really ridiculous lately. I forget the guy's name, but the same Russian guy basically wins at pretty much every stage, and I think he's like 8 hours ahead of the. It's him and his teammate, and then they're like 8 hours ahead of the rest of the field. So it's kind of crazy. And the quad guys are, I think, 4 hours ahead of the third place. There's these two brothers that are racing. But I'm pulling for my Polish guys because there's the cars who's, I think, sixth overall, and on the quads is fourth. So, you know, go Poland. Woohoo. And there's a there's also a rider in the bikes. I think it's 13th at the moment. So.
Yep.
Right on.
That's my incredibly ridiculously useless Dakar update. I will say that last week we really were talking out of our ass, kind of. And at one point, I think I said that Mitsubishi had pulled out of the car this year, and that's total bullshit. I mean, I got fed wrong, incorrect information from a friend, and I just ran with it without checking up. I think their factory team didn't go in, but there's lots of Mitsubishis out there. And there's Nissans and all, you know. So I think all the manufacturers that you're used to seeing are actually still out there.
So take our updates with a grain of sand.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm watching it, and I'm, you know, somebody made a really interesting comment because the big picture, you know, the from Boston.com had probably one of the most amazing Dakar photo series that I've seen yet. That one that you said, number 12, it's like, I mean, you actually feel the vertigo. It's like you see a helicopter, and it's shot from a helicopter. You see another helicopter below you, and like this truck kind of careening through down this mountain that's actually a dune. I mean, it's so fabulous. And you know, rooster tails of sand flying from the back of bikes. And it's an incredible series. We'll link to it if you haven't seen, if you don't follow that big picture stuff. And it made me really realize, because, well, somebody left a comment when I posted that on Facebook, and somebody left a comment, I think it was Corey, left a comment saying that he just recently watched the race of the car, because we see little snippets, you know, a little like 30-minute show on Versus. I mean, no, even the coverage in Europe, it doesn't show you when these guys are like in a dusty camp and is, you know, in the wind and like sitting in a little tent and going to sleep and cold and like, you know, sleeping on like, you know, there were leathers basically like wrapped up into a pillow and, you know, eating out of a freaking spam can. And, you know, I mean, and they're doing this for, the top guys have, you know, fabulous facilities and stuff like that, but there's guys out there that are on their own. They don't have a mechanic with them. They're just there. They got their equipment out there, and they're riding or driving and sleeping, you know, on the ground. And it's amazing. That's the thing that really just like blows me away to do that for 2 weeks, and I love it. That's a true adventure.
Grains of sand applied.
sorry.
No, not at all. Yeah, that Boston.com big picture thing. In fact, I went back to look at it this afternoon, and then I got caught up because they had done a whole picture story on
Haiti.
The horrible earthquake in Haiti. So
I saw that too. It was
I hope those folks can get it together. I know there's a lot of help coming in from overseas. So, something else that's fun, and this is kind of our New Year's kickoff that we get every year. And I have a tendency to sort of forget about it a little bit unless somebody reminds me, but this year I was paying a little bit more focus for it.
I never forget about it like outright, but it does always surprise me how ridiculous it gets.
Well, you know, I think that's the fun part of it, because they really do some really kind of goofy, very, very press oriented stuff. And what we're talking about is the joint Ducati Ferrari effort. Kind of celebration you're starting a shebang and a big press junket called Vroom. This is the 2010 edition. This is where they also will show off new cars. They will show off the new bikes. We all kind of got treated to the Ducati GP10 a little bit, or at least kind of a fuzzy photo from Nikki Hayden.
A little early.
Yeah, it was cell phone thing.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Can you explain that a little bit? I mean,
Nikki went to the Ducati factory, and while he was there, he got to see his new bike without any paint or without any stickers or anything. He decided to snap a cell phone picture of it, and then he decided to put it on his website because he was so excited. And the light speed of the internet, that thing was at every racing media outlet.
Yeah, and everybody was analyzing what they were looking at, and it was pretty wild.
And it was a single, you know, kind of crappy cell phone shot from a weird angle. And the funny thing is now all these other websites have it. Nikki pulls it from his website, which cracked me up. I thought that was funny. But it really, you know, it really doesn't give you a real good picture of the bike. And what we got on Wednesday was a whole bunch of high quality. So Wednesday was the actual introduction of the bike. And we learned a little bit more about it, a fair amount more. And then we got some great high-res photos of it. And that's when you really start digging in and trying to figure out what's different, what's changed. We got a little bit more word on Tuesday about...
I wanted to just wrap up on the Nikki thing, because I've seen some ridiculous threads on the Ducati list and on a couple of forums that I just bounced into where people are like, oh, is he going to get fired? No. He's not going to get fired, okay? They kind of laughed it off. It's not that big of a deal. I mean, I'm sure that he got a stern talking to. Like, hey, dude, well, you know, come on. You know, you've been with us. I mean, you've been with the sport for a long time. You know that you don't do that kind of shit.
Yeah, well, yeah, they'll be like...
But he's not going to get fired, okay?
Yeah,
relax.
The car next time. Yeah. Yeah, that was a kind of a funny little, I don't know, I think people were bored in the middle of winter and trying to figure out something to argue about. the other thing we heard about before I start getting into what Claudio Domenicali said about the bike was that we got a little bit more of an update on Casey Stoner.
You mean diagnosis number 5?
Well, this is directly from him, and it sounded relatively plausible. And I'll have links to in the show notes of the videos that they put up so far this week, and we'll try and make sure that we've got all those in there, because they've been doing like basically one every day.
Right.
Interviews with Claudio, interviews with Nikki, and silly shots of them skiing, and usually on we haven't seen it yet, but Friday. Is usually when we get something a little bit crazy. Remember, 2 years ago, they did the bike on ice.
Right. Yep. What was the year when they helicoptered the bikes, Caparossi? I think it was Caparossi and Bayless. So that must have been 2005.
Could be.
What, 2004? 2005 was Cheka. So they like dropped them on like the freaking Matterhorn or something, you know. It was amazing. They're like on the cliffside with the bike and smiling, but like, you know, precariously sitting on the edge of a 3,000-foot drop or something.
Yeah, there's amazing. Probably a goat right around the corner looking at him, chewing its cud.
Yeah.
I'll go back and pull those out because I've got all the archive stuff, and I'll see what I've got. That might be fun to actually pull up and put on right on too, just a comparison.
Yeah, it'd be awesome.
Yeah, but yeah, we had the total burning out on ice motorbike with the spike tires. Last year they did the go-kart competition.
That's right.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Again, with spike tires. They always do something with ice. So I'm out, and the reveal on Wednesday was pretty funny. I'm not sure if you've seen that yet, but they had a couple of girls dancing to some techno stuff. And then there was this big pile of balloons that all of a sudden lifts up, and Casey and Nikki were underneath it, and these red balloons all go floating off. It was funny.
Dear Lord.
Well, last year was cool because they had the thing looking like it was encased in ice, and I thought that was pretty.
That was very cool. Well, at least they're not in test tubes, you know.
Very true. So yeah. Anyway. Again, Casey Stoner, diagnosis, lactose intolerance, low salt intake. He's killed his lactose and not taking any of that in. Knocked up his salt levels, and apparently he says he hasn't been sick in months. So we'll have to see. He certainly had a great end of the season, no doubt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No doubt.
Well, good. You know, it doesn't matter what it is as long as he believes it.
Yep.
And is, you know, mentally... backed altogether, he's gonna be the guy again.
Exactly. I think I think he's a real threat this season. The odds makers have him and Rossi neck and neck. So I think we'll see. We'll see. Wednesday, Claudio Domenicali spoke in some more layman-ish but technical details about the bike and about things that they had to do to deal with the engine restrictions. And I've got a couple of paragraphs here that I can read when we can talk about them. This is in regard to the engines. He says, to switch from 18 engines to 6 is a very important adjustment. To go 1,600 kilometers with an engine that goes over 19,000 RPM isn't a simple assignment. All of the main parts for redesign, pistons, rods, crankshaft, the basics. It's an engine with which our main objective was to minimize the loss of power to increase durability. It was a change that will be very useful and interesting. This is the thing that's kind of weird. Also, because normally racing, durability isn't the principal objective. Perhaps this new objective has enabled us to perform a series of experiments that will also be interesting for the new production engines that we're developing, because at this point, they become almost comparable. For a production engine, 2,000 kilometers of track use is a severe challenge, so we can start to think that the race engine durability is comparable with production engines. What do you think of that?
Well, as a Ducati owner, I definitely agree with the fact that 2,000 kilometers of track use is a severe challenge for a Ducati. But no, that was I read that earlier when you posted that the note in the doc, and it's very interesting because that actually I think that's kind of what we always would want to happen. Even as a prototype series, we do want this technology to trickle down to us, right? And if it's getting to be, this is probably more of a threat to the unhappiness of the Flamini brothers than the actual capacity size.
It could be, although these are certainly prototype engines, so not.
They are. But you know, well, okay, there may be some exotic materials that still being used, but they may just go back to some tried and true stuff, you know, for the materials, or they'll develop something completely, you know, crazy. But that's harder to imagine. Basically,
he did mention, and I didn't put this in the show notes, but he did mention that they're spending about 15% more on this year on the program to at least get it started up. You know, obviously you're doing a lot of design work. He said, but that'll be made back over the year because they won't have to deal with as many engines.
Right.
So, you know, they're going from 18 to 6. It's
interesting that he actually said 18 because, I mean, there was no limit set by the FIM.
Right.
That was interesting because, I mean, did they really go through just one engine per bike per race?
Well, yeah, I mean,
around,
in theory, you've got 36 engines.
Yeah.
And each one is going to get rebuilt, if not only after a race weekend. Some of them are going to, you know, be pulled out and replaced during a race weekend. So you've got a minimum of 36, probably.
Right.
So it is a bit of a change.
And you know, if you were Suzuki a couple of years ago, you went through 13 in one day.
You know, I was thinking about that today myself, and the Qatar debacle. You know, these first couple of tests are going to be very telling. I believe during the tests they don't use any of their actual allocations. So if you see guys or teams having major engine issues, that's going to be scary for those guys.
Yeah, so they're gonna have to detune the bike.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the key is much like going to 800s is cross your fingers and hope for parity.
Right.
Because the last thing you want is to end up with,
on the straight, and then one bike is just blowing past everybody else.
Kind of like
2007.
So we'll see on that. There was a second thing that he said, which was pretty cool. And I think we kind of heard about this back in at the Valencia test, but it didn't stick in my mind. So it was nice to hear him reiterate it. He said the second big news isn't related to the rules, but to our attempt to make the bike more rideable. This has to do with the firing order. We have a motor that, since the switch to 800s, utilizes a screamer setup. This has permitted us to have maximum power, which was very important, was probably fundamental with the results that we've had in 2007, 2008, and 2009. But at a certain point, we began to wonder whether it could be worthwhile to retest the way that we'd already followed in the past. The last 1,000cc motors that we made in 2005 and 2006 used a big bang firing order, and this gave us important rideability. And both Nicky and Casey have said, and you'll hear it in the videos, has said the bike felt much more, and that's what they tested at Valencia. The bike just felt much more rideable, and that the new design actually had a lot less squat in the back.
So, you know, what's interesting about this is that this is not, this became a very known factor in engine design in like 2003, I think, on these prototype bikes.
Yep.
That's when there were some electronics being introduced and a lot of riders and they were experimenting with the firing order a lot more, and a lot of riders on the screamers were saying, you know, I just can't feel the rear, you know, and I just don't feel connected to the race surface as much. I feel like I'm floating out there, and I was very surprised when. In 2007, when I heard the bikes, because they were screamers, the Ducatis, where everybody else was pretty much, I think pretty much everybody else was doing a big bang at that point, right?
Yep.
And you know, and of course, you know, it did work in terms of, but there was only one guy that was able to ride that beast. So
right.
So I think it's a great move for Ducati, and I think my feeling has always been that you know, you can put a lot of power on these bikes, but there's only so many straights, and if the rider is not you know, totally confident, then you're going to lose a lot more than you would in the gain from the power, because it's probably not that much of a difference. I think they're probably going to be just pulling their arms like halfway out the sockets instead of completely out of the sockets.
The good thing about a big bang is, especially on the Ducati,
it'll sound cool.
Well, it'll sound cool, but it'll let you get out of the corners better.
Right.
So yeah. If you can get out of the corners better and have an earlier terminal speed, it probably won't be a problem. I think they'll probably be fine.
Yeah, whatever, Jim. It's going to sound cool.
Okay. One of us will hold up a phone at one of the races and go, hey.
That sounds cool.
There's a fair amount else going on, and maybe next week we'll report the rest of what happens, and we'll give you the information on whatever kooky thing that they decided to do. And I'm sure they will. It's tradition. Yeah, I saw Fernando Alonso in some other video today, sitting and goofing around on Stoner's bike. He races for Ferrari, and I was kind of laughing at that one. Speaking of Ferrari,
because I think for a really long time, because Alonso was one of those polarizing guys, because I think he said in 2006, oh, yeah. Was it that he said, oh, yeah, I you know, give me 3 weeks with a motorcycle I'll start winning races or something like that. Yeah. And everybody was like, what?
Well,
yeah,
the press was eaten up. They were all over the place. So, and in the same weekend, because the head team, I believe his name is Stefano Domenicali. I don't know if he's related to Claudio. I'm guessing not. He's the head of the Ferrari organization that deals with F1. And he verified today that Valentino Rossi is going to test an older Ferrari in Barcelona on January 20th and 21st. Kind of as a gift for retaining the GP title. Stefano also said he wanted to have a third car someday, but I think Valentino, and he's even said it over the last couple of days. In fact, I think it was mentioned in a New York Times article that he's going to stay with GP for a couple more years, and then what he'd really like to do is go to rally.
Yeah. He said by the time that he leaves MotoGP, he's going to be too old to drive in a Formula One car.
Yeah, and he'd have to get the big, you know, muscle builder neck. He's kind of known for having a, not a pencil neck, but a relatively slim neck.
Right, right.
So that was kind of cool.
That's such a good point. You know, that's I didn't even think about that. He's not built like a F1. Most of those guys are either. I mean, look at they got giant jaws like what's his name?
Clenching your teeth.
What's that? No, not sure. Well, Schumacher's definitely got a big jaw too. But no, I'm thinking of the super jaw guy. Right. You know, the British guy. God, I can't believe I forgot his name.
Well, we don't follow F1.
Yeah, I know, but he's been around forever. He was in the Red Bull team, and anyway, I'm an idiot. I just shut up.
Yeah, we'll stay in our niche.
Yeah. Okay, we'll stay in our niche. Good thinking. Yeah.
So yeah, I always like that to start the year off. It kind of sneaks up on you, and then all of a sudden you're like, "Hey, here's something new."
David Coulthard. David Coulthard, the jaw.
You're busy looking it up.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Ooh, that part I'm gonna keep in. That little nice big swallow.
Yeah, we'll drink our beer. In the other series that MotoGPOD likes to follow, World Superbike and World Supersport, they've got a test coming up at good old Portimao, and that's 3 days of official preseason testing. Not sure of all the teams that'll be there. I think they're coming out with a list in maybe this weekend or maybe late Friday. On the 22nd, Friday the 22nd through Sunday the 24th. And, you know, that was the final round there. They did some testing. They'll be back here again. Most all the top teams and top riders are going to be there, and it's going to be a fairly big change. This time of the year there, it'll be interesting to see what the weather is going to be like. It can be a little bit variable, but they're doing 3 full days of testing, and that should be lots of fun.
Indeed.
I'm looking forward to it. And the press is out there in droves, and we usually get tons of photos and a lot of information, and hopefully everybody will make it through intact. That is the key thing. You know, same with all the preseason testing, frankly. We've got a lot of guys that look to be going into this year pretty healthy. There were a fair amount of little surgeries and stuff that were going on.
Well, they're leftovers from, you know, the season.
Exactly. Stuff that they couldn't necessarily get done during the middle of the year. And I'm still in the process of putting together all the Moto2nos, and that's really solidifying now. And in fact, I heard of a couple of bikes that were going to be assigned and teams and what they're going to be riding, so we'll have that soon. And speaking of World Supersport, Michael Laverty, who was running basically half the rounds this year with various teams, has announced today that he will be returning to the BSB series with the Taz team, Relentless Suzuki, with teammate Alistair Seeley. So good for him, and he sounds like he's very excited, and it's a great team.
It's cool. Cool.
Excellent. Got anything?
Yeah, just last story was that it sounds like Jorge now finally has a team manager.
Yes.
He's the guy who was Cal Crutchlow's, who ran the team that Cal Crutchlow was on last year, right?
Wilco Zeelenberg.
Zeelenberg, yep.
And he's a former 250 GP rider, as well as a World Supersport rider.
Oh, wow.
And he was a test rider up until, I want to say, pretty recently, 2006 maybe, when he switched over to managing the team. Then, so he was the manager of Cal Crutchlow's team, World Supersport, but Yamaha, due to the economy, and what they were talking about was handing the bikes off to another team to manage, but nobody else could get the money for it. So they just swoosh, disbanded it. There won't be an official Yamaha World Supersport team. I found something really cool on YouTube today that I'll also put in our link list. It was a season review of 1999 World Supersport.
Oh, yeah. You tweeted that out, I think.
Yeah.
That was great. And,
yeah, it's cool because it's like Julian Ryder, Nick Harris are doing the announcing, some other guy. But it also has a ton of names: Toesland, Zeelenberg,
mm-hmm.
Chaus, I want to say Keeley, but I'm not sure. But just all, Muggeridge, Harris, you know, all the guys that were there at the early days of World Supersport. And frankly, most of them are still around now in one capacity or another. You know, it's 11 years on. So, and it was mostly crashes, really. But it was neat because, you know, you'd see all these tracks as they were 11 years ago, as well as the quote unquote safety features of some of them. Not a lot of runoff and stuff like that, but it was neat. It was cool. It was like 9 minutes long or something like that.
Yeah. It was fun. It was fun to see that.
We're sitting through. All right, Jules.
Okay. So just don't forget, we would like to have as many people write in top writers of the decade. Just mail it this to decade@motogpod.com. Tom, Alex, and Ian, I got your calendars. They're in the mail as of this morning, so look out for those guys. And Ian, dude, do you like win everything? I mean, every time I run into him, like I ran into him in Indy, I think he like won like a Ducati jacket or something. I mean, Jesus, dude.
Hey, you know, unless you enter, you can't win.
Oh, he must be entering a lot.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, anyway, congrats, guys, again. And, well, congrats to all 9 people who sent in correct answers. Send in that decade stuff. Check out the Dakar. It's going to be over this weekend. So it should be fun to watch the last, especially the cars. It should be interesting to watch the last few stages. And I think that we're going to see good stuff in the with Mark Como. And then we'll be back next week. Yeah, we'll see you then.
Adios, everybody.
Ciao. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD isn't affiliated with any of them. The MotoGPOD podcast was created by Bob Hayes. It is co-hosted by Jules Cisek and Jim Race. The website was built by Simon Roberts. Music by Jules Cisek. And the podcast is usually produced by Jules or a bunch of sewer rats.